ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేత్. నష్టప్రాయేష్వభద్రేషు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా భగవతీర్ఉత్తమశ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతీ నైష్టికీ. కృష్ణాయ వాసుదేవాయ దేవకీ నందనాయ చ నందగోపకుమారాయ గోవిందాయ నమో నమః. రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం కెంటో 11 అంటే చాప్టర్ 3 ఎంటైటిల్డ్ లిబరేషన్ ఫ్రమ్ ద ఇల్యూషరీ ఎనర్జీ. టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 6. కర్మాణి కర్మ భిక్కుర్వన్ సనిమిత్తాని దేహభృత్ తత్తత్ కర్మఫలం గృహ్ణన్ భ్రమతీహ సుకేతరన్. కర్మాణి కర్మ భిక్కుర్వన్ సనిమిత్తాని దేహభృత్ తత్తత్ కర్మఫలం గృహ్ణన్ భ్రమతీహ సుకేతరం. కర్మాణి కర్మ భిక్కుర్వన్ సనిమిత్తాని దేహభృత్ తత్తత్ కర్మఫలం గృహ్ణన్ భ్రమతీహ సుకేతరం. కర్మాణి కర్మ భిక్కుర్వన్ సనిమిత్తాని దేహభృత్ తత్తత్ కర్మఫలాసం. మాతాజీస్ కర్మాణి కర్మ భిక్కుర్వన్ సనిమిత్తాని దేహభృత్ కర్మాణి కర్మ భిక్కుర్వన్ సనిమిత్తాని దేహభృత్ తత్తత్ కర్మఫలం గృహ్ణన్ భ్రమతీహ సుకేతరం. వర్డ్ టు వర్డ్ ట్రాన్స్లేషన్. కర్మాణి వేరియస్ కైండ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫ్రూటీ వర్క్. కర్మభి బై ద కర్మేంద్రియస్ ద ఆర్గన్స్ ఆఫ్ యాక్షన్ కుర్వన్ పర్ఫార్మింగ్ స నిమిత్తాని విచ్ ఆర్ ఇంబ్యూడ్ విత్ మోటివేటింగ్ డిజైర్స్ దేహభృత్ ద ప్రొప్రైటర్ ఆఫ్ ద మెటీరియల్ బాడీ తత్తత్ వేరియస్ కర్మ ఫలం, రిజల్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ వర్క్, గృహ్ణన్ అక్సెప్టింగ్ భ్రమతి హి వ్యాండర్స్ ఇహ థ్రూఅవుట్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ సుఖ హ్యాపీనెస్ ఇతరం అండ్ అదర్వైజ్. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: Impelled by deep-rooted material desires, the embodied living entity engages his active sense organs in fruitive activities. He then experiences the results of his material actions by wandering throughout this world in so-called happiness and distress. Purport: The argument may be given that if a living entity were subject to the results of his previous activities, there would be no scope for free will. Once having committed a sinful action, the living entity would be bound in an endless chain of suffering, being perpetually subject to previous reactions. According to this speculation, there cannot be a just and omniscient God. Since the living entity is forced to commit sinful activities by the reactions of his previous activities, which were reactions to still previous activities. Since even an ordinary gentleman will not unfairly punish an innocent person, how could there be a God witnessing the helpless suffering of the conditioned souls within this world? This foolish argument can easily be refuted by a practical example. If I purchase a ticket for an airline flight, board the plane and commence the flight, Once the plane has taken off, my decision to board the plane forces me to continue flying until the plane lands. But although I am forced to accept the reaction of this decision, on board the plane I have many new decisions I can make. I may accept the food and drink from the stewardesses or reject it. I may read a new magazine or newspaper. I may sleep, walk up and down the aisle, converse with other passengers, and so on. In other words, although the general context, flying to a particular city is forcibly imposed upon me as a reaction to my previous decision to board the plane, even within that situation, I am constantly making new decisions and creating new reactions. For example, if I cause a disturbance on the airplane, I may be arrested when the plane lands. On the other hand, if I make friends with a businessman sitting next to me on the plane, such a contact may lead to a favorable business transaction in the future. Similarly, although the living entity is forced to accept a particular body, by the laws of karma, within the human form of life, there is always scope for free will and decision making. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be considered unjust for holding the living entity in human life responsible for his present activities, despite the living entities undergoing the reactions of his previous work. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, the influence of Maya is so strong that even in a hellish condition, the proud conditioned soul thinks that he is enjoying life. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha శ్రీచైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూప కదామయ్యం తదాతి స్వపదాంతికం వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం. श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपम् साग्रजाताम् सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितम् ताम् सजीवम् साद्वैतम् सावधूतम् परिजनासहितम् कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते तप्त काञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो हरे रामो 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 हरे हरे। So I seek the blessings of all the assembled devotees, especially speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, and especially today being a very auspicious day. There are three most important events. One is the Ratha Yatra, pastimes of Lord Jagannath, is taking place all over the world. Today is also the disappearance day of Swarup Damodar Goswami and Shivananda Sen. So I'll discuss briefly on the verse today, and then I will try to speak something about Swarup Damodar Goswami and Shivananda Sen. The afternoon, the Ratha Yatra pastime of Lord Jagannath would be covered, and Mahaprabhu's participation, Ratha Yatra pastime would be covered in the Sunday peace class. So this particular verse, we are actually reading this conversation between Nimi Maharaj and the Nava Yogendras, the nine Paramahamsa sons of Rishabhadev. So Nimi Maharaj is asking different questions to one question each to each of the Nava Yogendras, and they are answering these questions. In the third chapter begins with a question of Nimi Maharaj, in which Nimi Maharaj is saying that I wish to learn about the illusory potential of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, which bewilders even great mystics, and please speak to us about this subject. In response to this particular question of Nimi Maharaj, the sage Antariksha is actually answering in these verses. So let us try to understand the verse today. Karmani karmabhi kurvan sa nimittani dehabrut. Sa nimittani dehabrut. Sa nimittani means when a living entity is imbued with so many material desires, or when a living entity is impelled by so many material desires, sa nimittani, dehabrut refers to the living entity who is the proprietor of the material body. So dehabrut, the living entity, sa nimittani, being impelled by different material desires, what does he do? Kurvan, he does. Kurvan means he performs. He performs different karmani karmabhi. He performs different fruitive activities. Kurvan karmani. He performs different fruitive activities. How does he perform the fruitive activities? Karmabhi. With the help of different, with the help of his different actions and the working senses, Karma B especially refers to the karmendriyas. There are five knowledge acquiring senses and five working senses, but here it especially refers to the karmendriyas. So the first two lines is as follows: the living entity being impelled by different material desires, he performs different fruitive activities with the instruments of different working senses. And then the third and fourth line, tattat karma phalam grihnan. As a result of performing different fruitive activities, he gets different fruits. They are called as karma phalam. So tattat karma phalam grihnan, he accepts those fruits. He then experiences the results of his material actions. He accepts those fruits. In experiencing the results of those fruits and accepting those fruits, what does he undergo? Brahmatiha suketaram. Brahmati means he wanders. He wanders from one species to another species. He wanders from one place to another place, or one planet to another planet, or one universe to another universe, but within the material realm. Brahmatiha, and what does he experience? Suke itaram. He experiences happiness and distress. Basically, he experiences the dualities in this world. Sukha itaram. Itaram means and otherwise he experiences distress. So this is what the verse is about. And before we go into the purport, I will just try to discuss something about the question which actually led to the discussion, and which is also highlighted in one of the points in the purport. So the question of Nimi Maharaj in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that he says that I want to know the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord, by which is actually bewildering all the living entities. So we see that in the scriptures, for example, in the Sri Isopanishad, it is explained that vidyamcha avidyamcha yas tadvedo ubayam saha avidyaya mrityum tirtva vidyaya mritam ashnute. It is explained that one should know vidya and avidya simultaneously, then a person can enjoy the full blessings of immortality. One should know both vidya and avidya, tadvedo ubayam saha. Or also it's explained that sambhutya sambhutam cha vinasham cha yastad vedo ubayam saha vinashena mrityum tirtva sambhutya mritam ashnute. It's explained that one should know that temporary material creation with the different planets and the living entities, and one should also know the Supreme Lord, his abode, his qualities, his form, his pastimes. When a person knows both of these things, then a person can enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So therefore, we find in the scriptures that there is an emphasis that one should know about Maya, and one should also know about Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, when he writes his reflections on these verses of the Isopanishad, he emphasizes on this point that how one should be conscious of Krishna and one should be conscious of Maya. And that is what the Bhagavad Gita is also teaching. Krishna says that Daivi Hesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratyaya Mameve Prapadyante Maya Medam Tarantite. So the first two lines Krishna talks about the power of Maya. How my illusory energy of mind is actually divine in nature, and it is composed of the three modes, and it is very difficult to overcome. And the next two lines Krishna talks about his own power, but one who takes shelter of me, he can very easily overcome. So therefore, one has to know the power of Maya as well as one has to know the power of Krishna. So that means one has to take Maya seriously, and one should also take Krishna seriously. So we find Prabhupada emphasizing this point different places, how one should be conscious of Krishna and conscious of Maya. For example, when a person is only conscious of Krishna, but if he is not conscious of Maya, then he can actually he can get diverted from his spiritual practices. Bharat Maharaj, he was so conscious of Krishna that although he was a he was a very powerful young king, but he was so much attracted to Krishna that he actually gave up all his opulences, just like a person just like a person would give up the stool after passing stool. So when a person passes stool, he does not actually look back that I have given up something useful. Let me again go and take something like that. This is how the acharya has explained that analogy. So when a person passes stool, he doesn't look back to actually to go and gather what he gave up. So that was the extent of Bharat Maharaj's renunciation, Bharat Maharaj's attraction towards Krishna, that he actually gave up his opulences just like a person gives up the stool. But that Bharat Maharaj, when he went to the forest, he was in one sense not cautious of Maya. Means like when the deer came to him, he actually saved the deer. There is nothing wrong in saving the deer. But he actually became attached to the deer. He started taking care of the deer, and he kept his spiritual practices in the side. So because he was not cautious of Maya, that he did not see that how becoming attached to the deer is actually taking him away from his actually real goal for which he came to the forest. So because he was not cautious of Maya, so although he was practically on the initial stages of love of Godhead, but not being cautious of Maya, and he did not consult anybody, and therefore he actually ended up becoming a deer. And that is why we find when he later became Jadabharat, he learned his lesson. And as a Jadabharat, he was not only conscious of Krishna, he was also conscious of Maya. So that is why he actually behaved like an avadut. He behaved in an unusual manner when his parents would actually tell him to, when his father would be teaching him to perform, like how to chant the Gayatri mantra, how to maintain cleanliness. He would actually exactly do the opposite, because all his family members were actually karmakanda by nature, so he didn't want to get contaminated with their association. So therefore, he was so cautious of Maya that people would lose the inspiration to actually teach him something. So internally, he was very conscious of Krishna, and he was very cautious of Maya outside. That's why he behaved in a peculiar manner. So, and another example, we find that somebody who is cautious of Maya but not conscious of Krishna, how it actually led to that person's downfall. For example, Shaubari Muni, in order to advance in his spiritual life, he was performing austerities, and he didn't want to get distracted. So therefore, the place he chose for performing austerities was under the water. So he was so cautious of Maya that he actually went under the water to perform austerities, so that there would not be any influence of, practically no influence of Maya or sense objects, etc. But sometimes when a person becomes, when a person's austerities are on a material platform, when it is not imbued with Krishna consciousness, that those austerities actually make a person proud, and those austerities make a person hard-hearted. So Shaubari Muni, he was conscious of Maya, but because he became proud and he was not conscious of Krishna, When a person is conscious of Krishna, naturally you'll be conscious of respecting the devotees. But Shaubari Muni, because he was not conscious of Krishna, he was not conscious of the exalted position of Garuda. So therefore he felt that I have the authority to even curse Garuda. Because some fishes complained to Shaubari Muni that Garuda is coming and actually eating us. It's actually the natural food of Garuda. But Shaubari Muni, he actually cursed Garuda that, oh, if you enter this particular lake, I curse you that you will die. Something like that he cursed. So the point is that he thought that he has authority to curse Garuda. So the fact that he was not conscious of the exalted position of Garuda, that means he was not conscious of Krishna. And that led to his downfall. That later Shaubari Muni, just by seeing the fishes mating with each other, he became agitated and then he came out of the water and then he ended up marrying the 51 daughters of King Mandata. So therefore, the scriptures warn that one should be both conscious of Krishna as well as one should be conscious of Maya. So therefore, the question of Nimi Maharaj, in the previous chapter, he wanted to know about the different grades of devotees. He wanted to know about, he inquired about the Bhagavad Dharma. So those questions show that how he was conscious of Krishna. But in this question, the fact that he is asking that, please describe about the illusory energy of the Lord, that shows that how he is conscious of Maya. Just one more point. When we talk about knowing Maya, as I mentioned, the Isopanishad says that one should know both Vidya and Avidya. Means like one should know how the Maya works. It doesn't mention that one should try to see Maya or one should try to experience Maya. So in the case of Maya, one should simply know how the Maya works, but one should not try to see or experience Maya. But in the case of Krishna, one should not simply try to know Krishna. He should not simply remain on the knowledge platform. One should try to put that knowledge into practice and experience the result of devotional service. Because when a person tries to see Maya or experience Maya, so that the desire for seeing or experiencing Maya, that will lead to a great miseries. And that is what happened in the life of Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi, when the Lord appeared in front of him, Markandeya Rishi, he said that, I want to see your illusory potency. I want to see your illusory potency. That purport is explained that the curiosity to see Maya is dangerous because it can result in sinful material desires. It can lead to a sinful material desires. As we say that curiosity kills the cat. So, and also it's explained that when Markandeya Rishi expressed the desire, the Lord actually smiled at Markandeya Rishi. The Lord actually said that you want to see Maya, but seeing Maya is only going to be a cause of experiencing grief. If you want that, I will give it to you. Because you are asked that desire, I must give you a boon. And then after experiencing Maya, Markandeya Rishi, he ended up spending so many thousands of years in experiencing Maya. And then he got the realization how Maya is powerful. So therefore, the point is that one should try to simply know Maya. One should know how the Maya works. One need not have to see or experience Maya. But in the case of Krishna, it should not simply remain on a knowledge platform, but one should try to experience Krishna consciousness by practicing, by applying that knowledge into practice. And that is why in this purport, it's explained, according to Vishnu Chakrataku says that the influence of Maya is so strong that even in a hellish condition, a conditioned soul who is proud, he is satisfied to be in such an hellish condition. he is happy there. So that is the power of Maya. And another theme which is actually mentioned in the purport is that Dayan Maharaj writes that sometimes a person may raise an argument, the Lord is actually unjust in actually giving punishment to a living entity. When a living entity misuses the free will and commits sinful activities, he gets a particular body and then he is forced to commit further sinful activities, and then he is forced to commit further sinful activities. In this way, because of the first misuse of free will in committing sinful activities, he is practically for the rest of his life, in whichever species he actually takes birth, he is forced to commit only sinful activities. So what kind of a Lord? He is so unjust in giving punishment. So just because of the first misuse of the free will, for the rest of the journey, for the rest of the journey of a conditioned soul, the living entity is forced to actually commit sinful activities and undergo suffering. In this way, somebody may raise an argument. So for that, Sri Dayan Maharaj gives a very simple counter argument by saying that actually, yeah, living entity, when he misuses the free will, he is punished. He gets a particular destination, he gets a particular body, he gets a particular reaction. But even while undergoing that reaction and punishment, he still has the free will. He still has the free will to make good decisions and change his future course of journey. And for that he gives a simple example that when a person boards an airplane, having bought a ticket, once he goes into the airplane, he can't actually change his destination. But while actually going in an airplane, he can make many different decisions which can shape his future in a positive manner or in a negative manner once he comes out of the airplane. He can actually quarrel with somebody in an airplane and then get arrested once he actually lands. Or he can make some friendships with some businessman and then start some new business after he lands. So therefore, the free will is always there. So therefore, the purport Vishnu Chakota, the Sriyan Maharaj writes that the Lord is never unjust in punishing a conditioned soul. He mentioned this point that the Supreme Lord cannot be considered unjust for holding the living entity in human life responsible for his present activities. So just talking on this theme of punishment. So this theme of punishment, we find that in the Mahabharata there is a verse in which it's explained that there are, I think, 7 or 8 symptoms of lust. Out of that, one of the symptoms of lust is that punishing a person more than that is required. Punishing a person more than that is required. So sometimes the punishment may be done more than that is required, or sometimes a person is punished very less compared to the maybe sinful activities which a person has performed. So when a person punishes more than required, it shows actually the person who is punishing is very much averse, or he is having a sort of enmity or anger towards the person. When a person does not punish well enough for the sinful activity committed by a person, it shows that the person who is actually awarding the punishment has a certain attachment towards the person. So therefore, he has a soft corner. For example, punishing more than required, one example which we can take is like Jamadagni. Bhagavatam explained that Jamadagni punished Renuka more than that is required. So therefore, Jamadagni got the reaction, he was actually killed by the sons of Kartivirya Arjuna. Another example is that there's a story of Prishadra. There was a king called as Prishadra. This Prishadra, he was previously some of the Kshatriyas, they would actually dedicate themselves for protecting the cows, and they would not even get married. So Prishadra, he was one of the son of Vaivasvata Manu. He comes the dynasty of Vaivasvata Manu. He actually dedicated his life for cow protection, and he did not get married. So once when he was actually guarding the cow shed, a tiger entered the cow shed, and that tiger, the cows actually started making sound, and then he could actually hear the roar of a tiger, and then he went to attack the tiger. It was in the midnight, and he could not, and the sky was also dark, and he could not clearly see which is the actually tiger. So with his sword he actually attacked the tiger, thinking that to be a tiger, but actually he ended up actually attacking the cow, and cut the one of the ear of the tiger, and the tiger flew. And the next morning, when he saw that, he realized that instead of actually killing a tiger, he had actually killed a cow. So it was a mistake done. It was a mistake actually done unknowingly. But when his spiritual master Vasishtha came to know, Vasishtha actually cursed him that because you have performed this sin, then I think you will take birth as a Shudra or something like that. He cursed him. So it is explained that actually, if you see the character of Prishadra, whole life he had actually dedicated for protecting the cows, and he actually, because of lack of light, and he unknowingly actually ended up killing a cow, although Gohatya is considered to be a very great sin, but this mistake was performed unknowingly. But Vasishtha over-punished for his mistake. He punished more than that is required, because the reason it is explained is that Vasishtha, he was actually performing the role of a priest. Normally a Brahmana, he should not actually, because when a person accepts the role of a priest, then one may have to accept the sinful reactions for whom actually the Brahmana is performing the, say, the yajna, etc. So therefore, many times the Brahmana is reluctant to perform the role of a priest. So because Vasishtha, he had taken up that occupation, so those sinful reaction which he had accepted, that clouded his intelligence. So therefore, he didn't have the proper discrimination how much he should be punished. So he became, he showed more anger than that is required. And then, Prishadra was punished more. So therefore, that punishing more than required, it is actually it shows there is a more anger, there is an element of more of passion or ignorance, there is an aversion towards the person. And an example of a person, example of when you are punishing another person, if he actually give punishment less than actually what the person deserves, that shows the attachment towards the person. The classic example is Dhritarashtra. So Dhritarashtra was advised time and again, right from the birth of Duryodhan, that Duryodhan should be actually rejected, and Duryodhan, you actually punish Duryodhan for all his so many wrong activities, sinful activities he has committed. But Dhritarashtra would never do that because he was actually attached to his son. So therefore, it really requires a fine discrimination. It requires a maturity and spiritual intelligence to know how much to punish and how much to show mercy. Because the purpose of punishment is to actually elevate a person. If the punishment or mercy, if it does not actually elevate a person, then the purpose, that means the punishment is not enough. If the punishment does not elevate a person, then the purpose of punishment is not fulfilled. And also, in the name of showing mercy, if it actually ends up pampering a person to commit actually more sinful activities, then also that mercy is actually not appreciated. So that is why it's explained that whenever this principle of spiritual intelligence is compared, like for example, it's explained that in the Prithu Maharaj's intelligence, in his intelligence, he was compared to Yamaraj. So Prabhupada writes here that Yamaraj, as the superintendent of death, has to judge the criminal living entities who have committed sinful activities throughout their lives. Consequently, Yamaraj is accepted to be the most expert in judicial matters. So that is why when Parikshit Maharaj or Prithu Maharaj, when their intelligence is glorified, their intelligence is compared with Yamaraj, because Yamaraj, in order to show give exact punishment, it requires fine discrimination and fine spiritual intelligence. So therefore, we find that even in the first canto, that in that episode of Ashwatthama getting punished, it is explained that evam parikshita dharmam, Krishna was testing Arjuna's sense of justice. Krishna was telling Arjuna to kill Ashwatthama. On the other hand, Draupadi was telling Arjuna to do not kill Ashwatthama. He should be respected. She was giving different arguments. I'm not going to the detail. And Yudhishthira Maharaj was also supporting Draupadi, but Bhima was telling that Ashwatthama should be killed. And finally, Krishna tells that you act in such a way that all these people are satisfied. And the scriptures are also followed. Where the scriptures mentioned that, scriptures say that when an aggressor should be killed. So here Ashwatthama was an aggressor. He had killed 5 sleeping sons of the Pandavas. Therefore he should be killed. But then scriptures also mention that if a Brahmana, aggressor who is a Brahmana or a Dvijabandhu, he should not be given corporal punishment. If the Brahmana who is an aggressor, if he is given corporal punishment, the person who gives that corporal punishment, he goes to a hell called a Surpamukhi hell. It is explained in the description of the hellish planets in the Bhagavatam. And scriptures also say that when an aggressor is standing without the weapon, he should not be killed. So Ashwatthama was standing without a weapon, and although he was an aggressor, he was coming in a Brahminical family, so he should not be given proper corporal punishment. But the scriptures also say that aggressor should be killed. So Krishna is saying you follow all these injunctions. So when a tiger attacks a cow, you have to protect the cow, and you have to you can even go to the extent of killing a tiger. But when 2 cows are attacking with each other, you have to protect both the cows. You have to stop them from fighting with each other. So similarly, when 2 scriptural injunctions, they apparently give a contradictory proposal, you have to act in such a way that both of them are satisfied. So that is what Krishna was telling to Arjuna. You act in such a way that all these scriptural injunctions are satisfied and all these devotees are satisfied. Because it is not that one is a demon, another is a devotee. All these are devotees. You satisfy all their opinions. So therefore, Krishna tested Arjuna's sense of justice, and Krishna externally tested Arjuna, and internally Krishna guided Arjuna how to make the decision. And Arjuna came out successful. So therefore, this concept of punishment and mercy, it comes again and again in the Bhagavatam. And another point from the purport, as explained, that how the free will of a living entity is never taken away. That's what this example is given, that how even while going in an airplane, he cannot change the destination, but still he has the free will to make different decisions. So when we talk about this free will, for example, so this free will is called as Svatantra Ratna. In the Bhagavad Gita itself, we find that when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, Krishna did not exploit the surrender of Arjuna. So sometimes the submission can be exploited with a superior, but Krishna did not exploit the surrender of Krishna. Krishna did not exploit the surrender of Arjuna. Krishna logically and shastrically guided Arjuna, and ultimately he actually gave the free will to Arjuna to decide what he wants to do. So while speaking Bhagavad Gita, sometimes Krishna appears to actually speak, appears to impose his view. Like many places in the Gita, Krishna says, Tasmad uttishta kaunteya yuddhaya krita nishchaya. So therefore you get up and fight. Yudhya mayi sarvani karmani sanya sadhyatma chetasa nirashi nirmama bhutva yudhyasva vigata jvara. Give up your lethargy and fight. So Krishna appears to be imposing his views. Like for example, another verse, Krishna says that yadi ahankaram ashritya nayotsya iti manyase mityesha vyavasayase prakriti swam niyokshati. He says that if you don't act according to my instruction, if you act according to your false ego, you will be destroyed. So this is like it appears that Krishna is forcing or threatening Arjuna to make a decision. But actually, like when a person is speaking, when a person is presenting based on the logic, it is actually a style of logic. In order to give a punch to the speech, sometimes you have to speak like that. But ultimately what Krishna said was that Vimrusheda aseshena etechasi tatakuru. Although in several statements in the Gita, Krishna appears to be imposing Arjuna, forcing Arjuna. But that is the part of the style of actually speaking based on logic and scriptures. You, in order to make that point, in order that the point is properly made, you may have to speak like that. But ultimately, Krishna gave that choice that yate chesi tata kuru. So he did not interfere with the free will of Krishna, with Arjuna. So therefore, Krishna or the scriptures, they do not take away the freedom from a living entity. Rather, the scriptures and Krishna, they give another choice which can be included in using our free will. It's like suppose you are answering some multiple choice question. So there are four options are there. So in our life, like when without actually bringing Krishna into the picture, all the options in our life are basically the material options. It could be maybe to go for this movie or that movie or this movie or like that. It could be all the material options on a Sunday. But when Krishna comes into the picture, there's another option added, that instead of going to the movie, you can go for the satsang. So Krishna does not take away that freedom, whereas he is actually giving another, he is adding another option to the multiple choice question, that instead of choosing the normal options, you can choose another option. So, and not only Krishna as a person, he does not interfere with the free will, even the system which he has established for living in this world, even in that system also, he does not interfere with the free will of a living entity. For example, the system which he has established for living in this world is the system of Varnashram. Although in the system of Varnashram, theoretically speaking, that the Brahmana, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they have independence, and Shudras, they do not have the independence, or the worker class do not have the independence. But if you study more clearly, that even the worker class, they also have lot of independence in the Vedic times. For example, in the Vedic times, even the worker class, like suppose somebody is say barber or somebody, so you would be working for different people. You would not be serving one particular master. He would be serving different people. And he would be still living with the family. But in the modern system, that modern system practically forces a person as a, to remain a full-time employee. Practically, the all the corporates, like unfortunately, yeah, most people we end up working for 12 hours, 14 hours. Practically, it remains a full-time employee, and then and also that one is separated from the family. So the freedom is actually in the modern system, that freedom is actually taken away. But in the system given by Krishna, in the Varnashram system, even although theoretically speaking, the worker class, they don't have much freedom, but even they had a greater freedom compared to the compared to the workers in the modern system. So at least we can try to appreciate the Krishna system, how in Krishna system he does not interfere with the free will of living entity. And for example, that like in the modern system we find that, like, as I mentioned, that like people are separated from the family, they are made as a full-time workers, and then many intellectuals, they are forced to give some opinion against their belief system. Practically most of these newspapers or magazines or news channels, like, it's all the paid media, like many of them may have a certain belief system, but they will be forced to actually give a view which is against their belief system because they are purchased by the people. So the particular, their freedom is actually taken away. So therefore, the scriptures prescribe us to protect one's independence, even if it means living with fewer resources. Even if it means living with fewer resources, because the independence is the greatest resource, and that should be treasured at any cost. Why we want to preserve that independence? So that we can offer that independence to Guru and Krishna. So it is not that we just simply want to be independent. That independence has to be preserved for the sake of offering it to Guru and Krishna. If a person remains independent even with respect to Guru and Krishna, what is the use of preserving that independence? So, and that's why we find that even before the Mahabharata war, Yudhishthira Maharaj, that before the war starts, he tells that if anybody from my side wants to join the other side, they are free to go and join the other side. So, because although Yudhishthira Maharaj is actually fighting for the sake of Dharma, but forcing somebody to fight for the sake of Dharma, it is also in one sense as cruel, it is also as harmful as Duryodhan's sin of controlling people and buying them and enslaving them. Duryodhan was actually forcing and enslaving people. Like Dronacharya was fighting because of the remuneration given by Duryodhan. He was actually doing that. But although Yudhishthira Maharaj was fighting for the sake of Dharma, but still he gave the freedom that if somebody wants to join the opposite party, they can go and join. So therefore, that Krishna as a person and also the system established by Krishna, both of them do not actually interfere with the free will of a living entity, and which is what highlighted in the purport. And today being the very auspicious disappearance day of Swarup Damodar Goswami and Shivananda Sen, they are very great associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. We can find that Swarup Damodar Goswami is a renunciant and Shivananda Sen was a grahastha, but both are such intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this shows that it does not actually matter in which situation a person is in. A person ultimately, yeah, one has to one has to actually practice devotional service in whatever situation one is in. One should choose a situation which will be favorable for practicing bhakti, and both of them are actually pure devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Swarup Damodar Goswami, it's explained that Prabhura Atyanta Marmi Rasera Sagara. Swarup Damodar Goswami was an intimate friend of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was a ओशन ऑफ ट्रांसेंडेंटल मेलोस रसेर सागर. तो स्वरूप दामोदर गोस्वामी बिफोर ही टुक सन्यास हिज नेम वॉज पुरुषोत्तम आचार्य. ही वॉज अ रेजिडेंट ऑफ नवद्वीप इन बंगाल. एंड व्हेन चैतन्य महाप्रभु टुक सन्यास बाय सीइंग द सन्यास सेरेमनी ऑफ चैतन्य महाप्रभु ही बिकेम मैड एंड ही बिकेम मैड एंड इन हिज मैडनेस ही वेंट टू वाराणसी एंड ही वेंट टू वाराणसी एंड इन ऑर्डर टू टेक सन्यास and he took sannyas in the Shankara Sampradaya and he took sannyas from in the Shankara Sampradaya there are different divisions of sannyasis. So he took sannyas from a Tirtha sannyasi in the Shankara Sampradaya. So usually in the Shankara Sampradaya, before a person takes sannyas, a person has a title, a brahmachari title, and then after a person takes sannyas, his title would be changed. So when a person takes sannyas, the brahmachari student of a sannyasi by the title Tirtha would be Swarupa. And then after taking sannyas, his title would change from Swarupa to Tirtha. But in the case of Swarup Damodar Goswami, he retained his brahmachari title. So that is why the name Swarupa remained. He did not accept the title of a sannyasi. He underwent the preliminary processes of sannyas. That means, before taking sannyas, a person performs the different shraddha ceremony. He actually gives up the tuft of hair. He actually gives up the sacred thread. But after taking sannyas, he did not accept the title of sannyasi, and he did not accept the sannyas rod, and he did not accept the. He also did not accept the. He did not accept the sannyas dress also. He did not accept the saffron dress. So why he took sannyas and why he did not accept these things, that's explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Why Swarup Damodar Goswami accepted sannyas was that nischinte krishna bajiba yaita karane unmade karilateha sannyasa grahane. So it is explained that Swarup Damodar Goswami, he wanted to worship Krishna without any disturbance. And therefore, out of madness, he accepted sannyas. Because sometimes there could be different purposes for sannyas in the initial days in the ISKCON movement. So sometimes, like somewhere accepting sannyas because sannyasi would get the first Mahaprasad plate. So something like that. So, some conception was there. So like that, there can be different facilities associated with that. But the main purpose of sannyas is that he wanted to worship Krishna without any disturbance. And he did not actually accept the sannyas name, danda, or saffron color, because these titles and the sannyas danda, the different saffron dress, they can also act as a distraction for actually serving Krishna with a one-pointed attention. So there can be two disturbances. One is like the distractions in the form of the different worldly responsibilities, which can actually act as an obstacle for serving Krishna with the one-pointed attention. So therefore, Swarup Damodar Goswami took sannyas. But when a person, after taking sannyas also, because of the respect and the adoration which can come along with that, one can get carried away by that also, and one may actually forget that the purpose for which he took the sannyas. So Swarup Damodar Goswami was so focused in his purpose of wanting to serve Krishna without any disturbance, that he did not even accept the sannyas, the external formalities of sannyas. And another very beautiful verse. So he just accepted the spirit of sannyas, that is to actually dedicate one's body, mind and words in the service of Krishna. Another beautiful verse Kaviraj Goswami says, Panditya avadi vakya nahi karo sane nirjane rahaye loka sabha nahi jane. So he says that Kaviraj, the Sarudamadhar Goswami was, he had the ultimate limit of scholarship, Panditya Avadi. But although he had the ultimate, he was a person, he had a limit of all learned scholarship, but he would not speak with anybody. He did not exchange words with anyone. Just like Nityananda Prabhu also, he traveled all over India, but he did not actually preach to anyone till he got the order from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sarudamadhar Goswami, he simply remained in a solitary place and no one could understand where he was. Krishna Rasa Te Tattva Veta. Sarudamadhar Goswami was cognizant of the mellows of devotional service. He was cognizant of the transcendental mellows in relationship with Krishna. And Deha Prema Rupa. He was a personification of ecstatic love. Sakshat Mahaprabhura Dvitiya Swarupa. He is a directly representative, he directly represented Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his second expansion. So that is why it is explained that Swarup Damodar Goswami knew the heart and the feelings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, whatever Chaitanya Charitamrita we have, it is all primarily coming from the notes of Swarup Damodar Goswami. Swarup Damodar Goswami made short notes and then he would explain to Raghunath Das Goswami about the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Raghunath Das Goswami made elaborate notes, and Raghunath Das Goswami described the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Kaviraj Goswami in the banks of Radhakund every day for 3-4 hours. And so on the basis of that, Kaviraj Goswami wrote all the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. Kaviraj Goswami not only wrote the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, he also wrote about the inner feelings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we find that is why, and how does he come to know about the inner feelings of Mahaprabhu? Because Swarup Damodar Goswami, he knew the inner feelings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And another beautiful verse, he describes about Swarup Damodar Goswami. Bhakti Siddhanta Viruddha Ara Rasabhasa Shunite Nahoya Prabhura Chittera Ullasa. So Swarup Damodar Goswami, it's explained that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was never pleased to hear books or verses opposed to the conclusive statements of devotional service. So Mahaprabhu would never like Apasiddhanta and Rasabhas. So there are two things. Apasiddhanta means something which is actually opposite to the conclusions of the scriptures, and Rasabhas means mixing of the transcendental mellows. So Gaurang Prabhu gave a simple example. Says that apasiddhanta is basically deviation from the siddhanta. Like suppose there is a harmonium is there. If somebody says, oh, this is mridanga. Like harmonium is there, but he says that this is actually mridanga. So that is like apasiddhanta. But the harmonium is there, the person says this is harmonium, but he plays the harmonium like a mridanga. So that is like rasabhas. So there is a mixing of transcendental mellows. So Prabhupada writes here that apasiddhanta, when bhakti siddhanta viruddha means anything which is against the principle of achintya bheda bheda tattva. And rasabhas is something which may appear to be a transcendental mellow, but actually it is not. So those who are pure Vaishnavas should avoid both these things opposed to devotional service, and these misconceptions practically parallel the Mayavad philosophy. Because apasiddhanta, it actually deviates from the real siddhanta, it practically parallels Mayavad philosophy. And rasabhas also, when a person becomes affected by rasabhas, does not understand what is a true transcendental mellow, when there is a mixture of mellow, and the, when he actually mistakes the real the something which is not a true transcendental mellow to be a real transcendental mellow, then he becomes like a prakrita sahajiyas. Sahajiyas means those who take things very cheaply. Like, to give just a little bit more example, for example, there are four examples of rasabhas. One example is that there are certain sahajiyas, they say that because Krishna performed Rasleela with the gopis in Vrindavan, and that Krishna appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must also have performed in the same way Rasleela, maybe with the ladies of Navadvip. This is how some sahajiyas actually propagate this view. This is a rasabhas, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was actually playing Rasleela in the mood of a devotee by doing Sankirtan. Not in the mood of an enjoyer, which was the mood adopted by Krishna, where he actually performed Rasleela with the gopis. But when people actually claimed that Mahaprabhu must also have performed Rasleela in the same way, so there is an example of rasabhas, a mixture of mellows. Another example is that the 10th canto, 65th chapter, it is explained that when Balramji came to Vrindavan, Balramji was having pastimes with the gopis in Vrindavan. So there it is explained that these sets of gopis with whom Balramji had pastimes, they were different from the gopis of Krishna. And there were different consorts of Balramji, and they were different from the consorts of Krishna. If Balramji had enjoyed with the same consorts of Krishna, then it would be a rasabhas. So therefore the acharyas actually make it a point to actually point out that. And another example, once Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Kamalakant Vishwas, he was another devotee. So he pointed out the mistake to Kamalakanta Vishwas. He told Kamalakanta Vishwas, you are actually a Bauliya, you are a Sahajiya, because you don't know things as they are. So what was the mistake committed by Kamalakanta Vishwas? Kamalakanta Vishwas went to the king of Orissa and he told him that Advaita Acharya is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he has a debt of some 300 coins. So please relieve him of the debt. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what kind of a statement you made? You are claiming that Advaita Acharya is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord. If somebody is the Supreme Lord, then he is the proprietor of everything. Then how can he have a debt? So therefore Mahaprabhu pointed out, this is something about rasabhas. Whenever some rasabhas would be there, Mahaprabhu would not tolerate and immediately would question. Or another example of rasabhas is that the Daridra Narayan concept. The Daridra Narayan concept is nothing but Manav Seva is equal to Madhav Seva. That means they said that you just serve a poor man, it is equal to serving God. So that means they are making the poor man equal to Narayan. So this is also a rasabhas, is in one sense Mayavad philosophy, Apasiddhanta. Yeah, Krishna says that whatever charity you may give away, you give it as an offering to me. Yat karoshi, yadashnasi, yajjihoshi, yadadansi yat. If somebody is philanthropic in nature, you do that philanthropy as an offering to Krishna. But equating that philanthropy with actually serving Krishna, that becomes a rasabhas. So therefore, that Swarup Damodar Goswami, Mahaprabhu would not tolerate Apasiddhanta and rasabhas. So therefore, whenever somebody would come and present something to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, before it is presented to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whenever somebody would come and present a poem or some particular composition, Swarup Damodar Goswami would first examine it. Just like, for example, suppose the Prime Minister or Chief Minister or some President, before eating a meal, there are certain assistants who actually examine whether it is proper or whether it is sometimes some poisonous food or something, like other people may examine the food. But in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was not only careful about where to take prasadam. He would take prasadam in the house of those who would chant 1 lakh names. And he was also careful about hearing the sound vibration that on one side we find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard from Sarvam Bhattacharya for 7 days. But on another side we find that how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very careful that before something is presented to Mahaprabhu, Swarup Damodar Goswami would examine whether there is some apasiddhanta, rasabhas present in that particular work. And for example, there is one particular pastime, maybe with that will end. So there was one person who came to Jagannath Puri, and he was acquainted with one of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called as Bhagavan Acharya. So he was staying with Bhagavan Acharya. This Brahmana's name is not mentioned. He was staying with Bhagavan Acharya. This Brahmana, he actually composed a certain poem. And he said that when Bhagavan Acharya read that poem, Bhagavan Acharya became very impressed with that poem, glorifying Jagannath and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then and then this Brahmana also said that I would like to present it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Bhagavan Acharya, he also liked that poem, and then he went to Swarup Damodar Goswami, and then he was telling him that there is one nice Brahmana who has written a nice poem. Can you please actually read that poem so that it can be presented to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So Swarup Damodar Goswami said that there are many like mundane poets who normally write poetry about mundane subject matters. Although sometimes it may be written with a poetic description, but because they do not glorify the Supreme Lord, the Lord would not actually take pleasure in that. And many mundane poets, they do not know the details of this. They do not have the right understanding of the principles of rasa. Rupa Goswami describes about this concept of rasabhas in great detail in the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 50. 49, 50, 51. So Swarup Damodar Goswami warned that many people they don't have the proper understanding of rasabhas. Like that he was telling to Bhagavan Acharya, but Bhagavan Acharya was insisting him again and again. And after repeated insistence by Bhagavan Acharya, Swarup Damodar Goswami decided to actually hear that particular poem. So then all the devotees were there, Swarup Damodar Goswami was there, and then so this particular Brahmana, he actually read out that first verse of his composition. So in that particular verse, I'll just read that verse. In that verse, it says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has assumed a golden complexion and has become the soul of the body named Lord Jagannath, and whose blooming lotus eyes are widely expanded. Thus, he has appeared in Jagannath Puri and brought dull matter to life. May that Lord, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Deva, bestow all good fortune upon you. So, this was the first verse in his composition. When he read this particular verse, all the devotees became so happy and they actually started clapping their hands and they became so blissful. Except Swarup Damodar Goswami. Swarup Damodar Goswami became so angry and he said, what kind of a verse you have written? In this verse there is a complete deviation from the Siddhanta, because this verse says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is referring to, has assumed a golden complexion and has become the soul of Lord Jagannath. So Swarup Damodar Goswami said that you have compared Lord Jagannath's body to be an ordinary matter, Lord Jagannath's body to be just a wood or matter, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just like when the soul enters the body becomes alive. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a soul, he entered and then he has actually made Jagannath alive, and the Jagannath, because he has come alive, so his eyes are actually blooming. So Swarup Damodar Goswami said, you have committed one offense to Lord Jagannath and one offense to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because you have compared the Lord Jagannath to just a wooden doll. And he has come to life because the soul of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered into that. So it is Padma Puran mentions that when you consider a deity to be a simply made of stone or wood, then that is considered a hellish mentality. Because the deity, it is not that Krishna is in the deity. Krishna is the deity. Krishna is the deity. So therefore, he said that you have actually committed an offense by comparing Lord Jagannath's body to be a matter. And the second offense is that you have committed an offense to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is the super soul, he is the supreme personality of Godhead. But you have compared Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a spirit soul. Just like a soul enters the body becomes alive. The soul of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered the body of Lord Jagannath and he has come to alive. So here also you have committed an offense to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because you have brought the supreme personality of Godhead to the position of a living entity. So that is what the Mayavad philosophy is, that it makes the supreme Lord to the position of a living entity, or it makes the living entity, it elevates the living entity to the position of a supreme Lord. So in this way, Swarup Damodar Goswami, he pointed out his faults and he was heavily chastised this Brahmana. But although Swarup Damodar Goswami chastised this Brahmana for this Apasiddhanta and Rasabhas, but at the same time he was very sensitive also. Because sometimes when we present the right philosophy, we may be technically correct, but in defending the philosophy, we actually end up hurting the sentiments of other people. So then Swarup Damodar Goswami, after actually pointing out the faults, he said, but nevertheless, in your verse, instead of taking the primary meaning of the verse, if we take the secondary meaning of the verse, he explained the secondary meaning later, it can be used as a glorification of the Lord. But the primary meaning is definitely it is actually an offense to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jagannath and Lord Jagannath. So therefore, that Swarup Damodar Goswami, he was actually in his scholarship, he was equal to Brihaspati, and at the same time he was a very sweet singer. He would sing so sweetly. We can see his scholarship, how he actually clearly pointed out the mistakes of this Apasiddhanta, but at the same time he was respectful and he was actually sensitive to the feelings of the other people. How this composition can still be used by taking the secondary meaning. So Prabhupada also had the same mood, that once a devotee made some painting with this concoction. Krishna was actually in a morose condition. So Prabhupada said, how did you make this painting? What is the reference for that? The devotee had no this thing. He said, oh, Krishna is in separation from Srimati Radharani in this. So Prabhupada actually chastised that, and then he said, but in order to accept the service of the devotee, then he said, okay, this painting can be used as a Krishna having headache. So Krishna, Prabhupada was also sensitive. In that way, we can see this quality of Swarup Damodar Goswami. And talking about Shivananda Sen was also such a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we know the famous pastime. Shivananda Sen was taking the devotees to from Bengal to Jagannath Puri. He would make all the arrangements. And once a dog also followed that party. And Shivananda Sen had an affection towards the dog, and then he wanted to take the dog also along with the devotees. When the dog boarded the boatman did not allow. So Shivananda Sen actually gave some extra, paid extra to the boatman so the dog can also be allowed. And then when they went to one particular place, when he could not see the dog, then Shivananda Sen became so angry, he actually sent 10 men to find the dog. And when they could not find the dog, Shivananda Sen actually fasted for the dog. Of course, this like there are many. Even in the modern times, we have many people who have affection for the dog. But this Shivananda Sen's affection towards the dog is completely on a spiritual platform. That then Shivananda Sen, all these devotees, when they reached the Jagannath Puri, they saw that Shivananda Sen saw that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this dog, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeding some coconut pulp to the dog. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was making that dog to actually chant and dance for Hare Krishna. And Shivananda Sen, on seeing that, out of his natural Vaishnava humility, he offered obeisances to the dog in order as an atonement for offending the dog. So the next day they could not find the dog, and the dog actually went back to the spiritual world. So Prabhupada writes in that purport that this is just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that a devotee prays, aspires to be the dog of a Vaishnava. So this story shows that when a person becomes affectionate to a Vaishnava, and because Shivananda Sen had affection towards the dog, and because of that, the dog ultimately attained the perfection. So therefore, one prays that somehow or other, I want to be a dog of a Vaishnava. I don't mind even taking birth as a insect or a dog, but I want to remain under the shelter of a Vaishnava. And finally, Prabhupada writes in a purport that he says that therefore it is therefore requested that all our devotees in ISKCON community become pure Vaishnavas, so that by their mercy all the people of the world will be transferred to Vaikuntha Loka. Even without their knowledge, everyone should be given a chance to take prasadam and thus be induced to chant the holy names and also dance in ecstasy. So because of the connection with Shivananda Sen, this dog attained perfection. So Prabhupada is appealing that all the devotees should also become pure devotees, so that anybody who comes in contact with them, they also attain the perfection, just like this dog attained perfection. So in this way we find there are many pastimes of Swarup Damodar Goswami, Shivananda Sen. But I would like to end by giving a summary of the class. So we discussed about the principle of being conscious of Krishna and cautious of Maya. And we discussed about the principle of punishment and mercy. And we also discussed how Krishna does not interfere with the free will of a living entity. And similarly, a devotee of Krishna also should not interfere with the free will of a living entity. And the system established by Krishna also does not interfere with the free will of the living entity. And then we discuss the pastimes of Swarup Damodar Goswami, especially how he was, he would examine the different poems and the works before actually presenting to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how he was again the Apasiddhanta and Rasabhas. And we discussed the pastime of how he found out the faults in the composition of a particular Brahmana. At the same time, he was sensitive to the Brahmana, so that the same shloka can also be used in another sense. And then we discussed the Shivananda Sen's pastimes with respect to the dog. I think I'll end here, because it's 10 o'clock. I think I'll not take questions. If anybody has any, want to discuss, I'll be present here. గ్రంథరా శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం కీ జయ. శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్ కీ. గౌర భక్త వృంద కీ జయ.